What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Hope everyone is doing well. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and appreciative, as always, that you are with us this week when we will be reviewing the off seasons of the Los Angeles Chargers with Eric Williams of ESPN and the Carolina Panthers with Bill Voth of Panthers.com. Looking forward to bringing you those interviews shortly, but first, let's take care of a few orders of business. If you have not subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast, don't worry, I'm not faulting you. I'm just asking you to please head to iTunes right now. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go to iTunes and please leave us a review and a rating after you have subscribed to the podcast to ensure that you never miss an episode. And you don't want to miss an episode, particularly this offseason when we are going to all 32 NFL cities. I guess what? It's actually 30 NFL cities. We're reviewing the offseasons of every club with a local beat writer. And the best way to ensure you don't miss any of them is by subscribing to the podcast. So in terms of big items from the week, I was at the spring league meeting on Tuesday, and hope you were following the coverage at profootballweekly.com. By now you've obviously heard of the big orders of business. The overtime period has been shortened from 15 minutes to 10 minutes, and I have my doubts about the NFL's thinking that that won't lead to more ties. I think it is absolutely going to, and that could be problematic. I also think it's going to affect strategy of coaches. This may offset the previous overtime rule change wherein both teams were given an opportunity to possess the football, assuming the opening kickoff didn't result in a touchdown. So we'll see, but do have my concerns over overtime going from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. I think the one change that kind of resonated with fans and probably players the most was the touchdown celebration loosening on those, you know, what they'll allow without penalty. So look, I'm working on a way we hear for ProFootballWeekly.com right now, so make sure you check that out. But I thought that this was a layup for the league, whether they're really listening to the fans and players or whether they're looking at their ratings. This was such an easy change to make and such a kind of good thing to buy some goodwill or to earn some goodwill for a league that obviously has been nicknamed for years the No Fun League. So it's going to be open for interpretation, though. That's the way we hear it. I'm working on, and it is going to be a process to try and get the players and the officials and the coaches and everyone on the same page. So if there are issues that pop up during the preseason and early in the season, let's all just think longingly back to May when we were roundly praising the NFL for making this change. Other big items from the league meeting, the obvious one, the Super Bowl being moved from LA to Tampa Bay. What this means, you know, it's several years out, and Tampa Bay has experience hosting the big game, and I thought this was the right move by the NFL too. Don't risk kind of creating bad optics by letting it stay in LA and having to overrule a policy that you have about new stadiums having to be open for 2 years before hosting the game. Make sure that they're able to kind of iron out all the kinks, and in the meantime, let Tampa Bay hold the Super Bowl in what I believe it's 2021, so or following the 2020 season, I think it is. So those are the big ones. They also have decrease the league, that is also decreased the roster cut down. It goes now straight from 90 to 53. They have eliminated the 75-man, the cut down to 75 players, excuse me. So I think that's good. It allows teams to carry all 90 into the final preseason game. It's going to make that last weekend just madness for teams and for the media alike. But I think that's ultimately a good thing. And then the allowance of an additional player to come back from injured reserve. They made the change a couple years ago to allow one player to come off IR. Now they're going to allow a second player, and I think that that also makes a lot of sense. I have no problem with that. So those are the big items from the league meeting, and again, I wrote on all of them at ProFootballWeekly.com. I would encourage you to check that out. And before we dive into our interview with Eric Williams of ESPN, I just want to refamiliarize you with our great sponsor, Loot Crate. So I was so pumped to get my crate for April. It had a Guardians theme, and there was so much cool stuff in it. I was really pulling for Goonies. That was one of the featured franchises, along with Star Wars, Destiny, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. But Goonies was my jam as a child. So to see such awesome gear in my crate, you know, sometimes I like to, and Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. You get up to a $40 value in the mail every month for less than $20. Sometimes I'll try and share some of the swag that I get in my crate, but because it was Goonies, that was kind of hands off to all my family and friends, and basically I've just been enjoying them. So you can be the envy of your friends and get 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. You enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. June's Loot Crate theme is Alter Ego, so you can find items from Spider-Man, Transformers, the Hulk, and DC Comics. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So again, you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. So you're going to want to head to lootcrate.com. again, it's /Shaw, S-H-A-W, and that's where you're going to get the best surprise you know is coming. It has monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to geek out your pet, you can get loot pets as well. Just so much awesome stuff here. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. One more time, it's the best surprise you know is coming. So head to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, and enter my code to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, so good stuff from Loot Crate there. Thank you again once to them. And without further ado, let's talk a little Chargers with Eric Williams of ESPN. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, taking a look at the Chargers. I almost said San Diego, Eric, but I know it's the Los Angeles Chargers, and an eventful offseason for them. We are chatting with Eric Williams, the great beat writer from ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at Eric_D_Williams. What's happening, my man? Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Arthur. I appreciate it. Not a whole lot, just like the team itself, just transitioning to, like you said, the Los Angeles Chargers, and trying to get used to what that's going to be like in 2017.
And how, you know, I feel like we spend a lot of time talking about what it's like for the players and what it's going to be like for a new coach and, you know, a front office. But I'm curious, what's the experience been like for you personally? How are you adjusting?
You know, it's been different and it's been a change. Although a lot of it's been the same because they've still been at Chargers Park practicing in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to make the actual transition until training camp at the end of July. So I think once that starts, then I'll really get a sense of what it's going to be like. Although they have had a number of events up in Los Angeles to try to, you know, attract support. And obviously I've been to those. But for right now, I guess it's been kind of the same because they've been in San Diego and a lot of the San Diego media has been attending their OTAs.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. In terms of relocation and everything, though, have you gotten all of your situation figured out? Are you going to be working from LA on a daily basis?
I will be up in LA on a daily basis, but I will be commuting for now from San Diego. So okay. The commute for me is a little over an hour going back and forth. I will be staying in hotel when I need to, you know, on game days or flying in and out for away games, and you know, again, logistically trying to figure it out like everybody else.
All right, well, the best of luck to you during that process. I'm sure it won't be an easy one, but it's an interesting team, Eric. I'm fascinated by the talent being assembled on this club, particularly for one that just underwent a coaching change and I know is coming off a difficult season. Let's start, though, with the offensive line. I think it's a reasonable place to start. The plug-and-play guards in rounds 2 and 3, Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney, the huge contract for Russell Okung to man the blind side. Is there a belief that maybe the Chargers finally have this resolved? And how do you anticipate? I know we're a ways away, but what do you anticipate a starting line looking like potentially?
Yeah. You know, they kind of stood pat there last year because they had some money in play with three guys, and specifically it was King Dunlap, Orlando Franklin, and Fluker. They moved on from all three this offseason and try to revamp and get a little bit more consistent play up front. As you mentioned, they signed Russell Okung to a pretty big deal. Yeah. When you look at the first 2 years of that contract, I know Russ a little bit because I covered the Seahawks before I covered the Chargers. I think it'll be an upgrade. You know, he's a couple years younger than King. He's a better run blocker than King, and he just has to be competent in terms of pass protection. They moved Slauson from center to left guard, where he played a majority of his time in the NFL. And Anthony Lynn, of course, is familiar with Slauson because he was with the Jets when Slauson was there, and likes him better at left guard. So now you have a pretty solid left side of the line, I think, with Russ and Slauson. They're going to have to figure out what's going to happen at center and right guard. Right now, undrafted rookie Spencer Pulley is competing with Max Turek, who they drafted in the third round last year, at center. And then I think at right guard, you're going to see Forrest Lamp there eventually. Right now, Kenny Wiggins is the guy that's working at right guard, kind of a journeyman that can play all five positions of the offensive line. And so we'll see how long it takes for Forrest Lamp to kind of win over that right guard position. And then they have Joe Barksdale at right tackle, who struggled a little bit last year, had the most penalties up front of any offensive lineman, but has been able to play week in and week out, hasn't had a whole lot of injuries. So they're hoping they can get better production from Barksdale next year.
All right, fascinating stuff, especially the move from Matt Slauson to center to guard. Here I am thinking that they could be rolling out two rookies, and it sounds like they won't exactly go that direction, at least not initially. Mm-hmm. Eric, sticking with the offense for another minute. Mike Williams, seventh overall pick, I think surprised some people. Did you think it was a little bit of a luxury pick, and what does it say about the front office and the coaching staff's belief or lack thereof in Keenan Allen's ability to stay on the field?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Although in the NFL, I don't know if you really have a luxury pick with all the injuries that can happen during the season. Certainly they were hit by injuries at receiver last year with Keenan going down with the ACL knee injury. Both Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams also had knee injuries that they dealt with in the second half of last year, and it really affected their ability to run the full complement of their offense with all the injuries they were dealing with at receiver. So I think they needed depth there. I thought they probably would have got more bang for the buck at safety up top, but I can understand, you know, maybe not taking Malik Hooker there because of his injury history.
Right.
But then you have, you know, Mike dealing with the tightness in his back, so he hasn't been able to practice. I think with the receiver, because of the transition from college to the pro, it's one of the more tougher transitions to make because of everything they had to learn. And then I think more particular, it's tough to transition in this offense because Phillips does so much at the line of scrimmage, and they change so much formationally and how they're going to attack defenses week to week. And so Mike has an uphill battle to come in and kind of learn the offense, learn what they want to do with him specifically. It's important for him to be on the field to learn that stuff in real time. So we'll see how, you know, that's going to affect him if he's able to get on the field for the last couple weeks of OTAs and minicamp and start that that process, that learning process.
And can you just speak briefly on kind of the rise of Tyrell Williams last year? And I guess maybe that's why I was slightly surprised, only because I thought he flashed some star power at times. But like you said, he was fighting an injury too. And you can never, I guess, have really too much depth at any position in the NFL, as you said.
Sure. Well, Tyrell was an undrafted rookie who came in and really flashed his rookie season. Fought his way onto the active roster, was a good player, but didn't really, you know, take off until next year, you know, because Keenan Allen was hurt. They had to really lean on Tyrell a lot more than I think they planned on. And his development, of course, ascended because he was able to get those reps. And now I think he's a trusted person in this offense and a guy that you know can go out there and make plays in terms of the Chargers. And so I don't think it's really a statement on Tyrell. I think it's more of a statement on Keenan being able to stay healthy because he's finished on IR the last couple of years. If Keenan's going to be hurt, you have to have a person that's going to come in and give you a similar look in terms of a guy that can move the chains and win one-on-one on the perimeter, win 50-50 balls, be able to create opportunities to get separation in a red zone. I think Mike Williams could be that player, but again, you need to see it on the field.
Okay, that makes sense. Turning to the defense a little bit, and we're chatting with Eric Williams of ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at Eric_D_Williams. I would imagine that you'll agree the sky has to be the limit for reigning defensive rookie of the year Joey Bosa and franchise pass rusher Melvin Ingram. But what do you think about the dynamic of those two potentially for a full season? Certainly that's what the Chargers are hoping for on the field together, and both of them making position switches, maybe a slightly tougher projection for Ingram, I would imagine, than Bosa.
Well, in terms of having two big bookend pass rushers, I think the sky's the limit, as you said. Mm-hmm. They could be, I'll say this, one of the better bookend pass rushers in the AFC West. I think it's too early to really say that they're going to be the best bookend pass rushers in the league just because they haven't done it over a full season together. So I want to see what that looks like. Sure. Bosa, of course, missed the first 4 weeks last year because of the hamstring and the contract dispute and all of that. I think the system scheme change helps Bosa because he goes back to his more natural position as a base in a 4-3 system. He's going to be an edge guy, you know, the majority of the time. They might kick him inside a little bit on early downs when they want to stop the run. In terms of Ingram, I think it helps him too because, again, he's going to be a Leo pass rusher, basically a pass rush specialist, you know, with his hand down as a weak side defensive end. And he'll be moving forward more than he would as a 3-4 rush, you know, rush linebacker or outside linebacker. So I don't think it'll be much of an adjustment for Melvin. And I think both will be productive in this system. One thing that Gus does really well is figure out what players do well and have them, you know, doing that more times than not. The important thing for Melvin, though, is getting into camp. You know, he's franchise tagged. They're negotiating, trying to get a you know, multi-year deal in place. They have until July 15th to do that, but you know, I think it's probably unlikely that he's going to be there for the beginning of training camp, and this is something that could linger, you know, until the start of regular season. And obviously, Gus would like him in now so he can kind of get Melvin going. So I think that's kind of one thing. And what was the second tag-on question that you had there?
No, I mean, I think you hit it on the head, really. And, you know, the AFC West bookend pass rushers, you know, maybe the best in the NFL when you look at either Mack and Irvin or obviously Holly and, yep, and Houston. Just great across the board. So it would be exciting to see the Chargers kind of enter that mix. I do think it's probably a little concerning for Chargers fans to hear potentially that one of their best defensive players could have a contract spat that lingers into the training camp, though.
Yeah, no doubt, because they dealt with it with Bosa last year,
right,
and that
right.
hurt them. I mean, they could have won some of those games early. The season could have been different having Bosa out there in the field, particularly when you look at that Kansas City game and you're up 24 points and you probably need another sack or two and you close out that deal and then you lose it. You start the season off, I think they were 1-4 or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they get a couple wins, the season goes differently for them.
Yeah, no doubt. Eric, you'd said something I found to be interesting. I had in my notes here, I was going to ask you if Gus Bradley maybe at times was too rigid with his scheme in Jacksonville, but it sounds like you don't see it that way. He's got a pair of potentially excellent lockdown man cover corners, I think, in Hayward mm-hmm. and Verrett, if Verrett's healthy. But I thought there were rumblings out of Jacksonville a little bit that maybe he wasn't playing to Jalen Ramsey and Prince of Macamora's strengths and Devon House's strengths at times last year. Is that not the sense you got?
You know, I wasn't in Jacksonville, so I don't know.
Right.
I covered Gus his first 4 years in the league when I was in Seattle, and I know Pete and that scheme, they really try to mold the scheme around guys' player strengths and what they do well. Sure. And they try to fit guys in to the system based off of that. And so I don't see it that way. I think Gus is more of a guy that, hey, and you look at a guy like Cam Chancellor, you know, Cam is a guy that's an in-the-box safety, you know, coverage isn't his strength. So they're going to put Cam in a position where he's near the line of scrimmage and try not to have him one-on-one in certain situations. So I mm-hmm, think, mm-hmm. you know, Gus is a guy. Red Bryant is a similar guy. You know, early on they had Red in a situation where he was a guy that was a five-tech in an early down situation so they could kind of play to the strength, which is defending the run and obviously not rushing the passer. So I think Gus is a guy that sees traits. I think when you see Jason and Casey, you mentioned their ability to play one-on-one, they're going to do that and they're going to press, but also there's going to be times where they play zone and they fall back depending on down and distance and scheme. So I think Gus is a good guy in terms of, again, finding a player's strengths and playing to that player's strengths.
Okay, interesting stuff. And you know, we've discussed the star power at the first and the third levels of the defense. Is Jatavis Brown a name that people are going to have to learn quickly? What about Denzel Perryman? What do you think about the second level of the defense and maybe us underselling them a little bit?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they have a chance to be really solid at the second level. They have some guys that have some playmaking ability. I think right now Perryman's going to be your Mike backer, your middle backer. Mm-hmm. Jatavis is going to be a weak side linebacker, which in that system has the potential to make a lot of plays as a run and chase guy. Also a guy that can do well in coverage because of his speed. Your Sam linebacker, your strong side linebacker is going to be Kyle Emanuel, who kind of played a similar role in John Pagano's 3-4 scheme. You know, really a guy that just kind of holds the edge. Again, a guy you probably don't want in coverage, but on early downs can give you a lot of production as a guy that's going to seal the edge for you, and then he'll probably come off in passing situations. So I think you're right. And Corey Toomer behind them is a good player that can come in and fill a role in passing situations because of his speed and also ability to play the run. I think they have some depth there in terms of the second level of defense.
Yeah, I get the sense that this is a defense that may sneak up on some people this year. I know they were put in some unenviable situations last year, obviously. Phillip Rivers, a career high in giveaways. And let's go there next. How confident is Anthony Lynn and Tom Telesco and everyone else that Phillip Rivers can again thrive in a ball control offense where, you know, if the defense is healthy, it probably will be able to take a little bit more off his plate, along with an improved offensive line and, of course, Melvin Gordon and this receiving core we've discussed?
Yeah, I think they feel like they can get those turnovers under control. I think at times Phillip felt like he had to win the game on his own in those fourth quarter situations and was trying to make, you know, a 21-point throw, you know, just getting it downfield and taking a chance. And a lot of times the dump offs were there and all he had to do was check it down and just continue to play in front of the sticks. So I think there's going to be a real emphasis on that. You know, take the easy throw. You know, don't risk the high risk throw and throw the pick six, and then really lean on Melvin Gordon. I think you're going to see a shift in focus on this offense to really create more balance. Let Melvin be the focal point of the offense and not have Phillip throw it around 45-50 times a game.
Right.
Along with Melvin, you know, they have Brandon Oliver coming back from Achilles tear, and he's looked pretty good in OTAs. I think he will be the guy, at least for now, that could be your complimentary back. They also like Andre Williams as a guy that can spell Gordon in early downs. And Kenyon Barnum, who they got from Philadelphia, is another guy that can create, make plays in space and because of his speed. So I think balance is going to be key. Another guy that a lot of people aren't talking about is Hunter Henry. You know, scored 7 touchdowns in the red zone last year, and I think he's just going to continue to build off of that. It really puts defenses in a bind because you still have Antonio Gates who you have to account for. So you can't double Hunter. If you don't double Hunter, you're going to be in trouble because he's going to win against man-to-man coverage. He's a very polished route runner for his age, and he's got speed, you know, underrated speed in terms of his ability to win either against safeties or linebackers. So I really think that's going to be a matchup nightmare for opposing defenses upcoming season.
Yeah, I love the Hunter Henry pick a year ago and loved his development as a rookie. And it was interesting how, with all the great tight ends in this draft class, there weren't as many last year. So the Chargers are a little bit forward thinking and getting their guy last year. I am getting the sense, though, Eric, that there are going to be a lot of mouths to feed in this offense. what do you think personnel-wise? I mean, you mentioned Antonio Gates just briefly, obviously future Hall of Famer. I think we need one more touchdown to pass Tony Gonzalez for first all-time among tight ends. But how do you see the personnel formation shaping out and trying to keep everyone happy in this offense?
No, you're right. It's going to be because, like you said, you have Hunter Henry and Gates at tight end. You have Melvin in the backfield along with Brandon Oliver. At receiver, you have Keenan, Tyrell Williams, Mike Williams, if he can get healthy. And then Travis Benjamin, we haven't even talked about, you know, a guy that, again, if you get him in space, he's going to create explosive plays for you. He was actually tied for first last season with 6 plays of 40-plus yards in the league last year. So he's a guy that can obviously stretch the defense. I think Phillip has been a guy that just kind of finds a guy week in and week out that has a hot hand. Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to feed somebody week in and week out. And I think, you know, if you're a fantasy player, that makes it tough because you never know who's going to have the hot hand going in for the week. I think the main thing, though, is Melvin Gordon has to get his touches. He has to get 20 touches a game, however you want to do that, whether it's running the football or getting them out in space in the passing game. So I think that's going to be the one steady contributor that you're going to see. And I think with the pass catchers, it's just going to depend on matchups week in and week out and who they like.
Okay, interesting. We got just a couple minutes left here with Eric Williams, VSPN. Thank you again, Eric, so much for the time. I do want to just ask about Anthony Lynn. I can't believe it took me 19 minutes to get to it, but rookie head coach, long time coming. I know he is highly respected around the league by players and his peers, but this is a lot, obviously, especially for a rookie head coach trying to move a franchise. How do you think he handles everything, both learning on the fly as a coach, but also all the extra things that come with relocation?
Sure. Well, first of all, he's a Bill Parcells disciple, so he's a real no-nonsense guy, and he's pretty blunt with his assessments, both in talking to players and working with the media, and I think that's a good change of pace from who they had before in Mike McCoy. There's a couple different reasons why I think he'll have success. One is the coaching staff. You have two former head coaches, one on the defensive side of the football in Gus Bradley, the other on the offensive side of the football in Ken Whisenhunt. So he can let those guys go ahead and handle their prospective sides of the football and not get in the way of that and just kind of really step back and take an organizational perspective or you know, direction in how he handles it. He can let those guys go and coach. He also has George Stewart as a special teams coordinator, who's been a long-time coach in the league and has a lot of respect among the players. So, again, let the coaches coach and kind of take on more of a director's role. And they're only moving a couple hours away. You know, players on their off day can drive up to Orange County and look, you know, for homes and real estate. So I think it's a little different than transitioning the Rams, you know, a year ago from St. Louis to L.A.
Yep.
In terms of the back and forth. So I think that helps him. I think playing in the step-up center, 30,000-seat stadium, is a lot better look than going to the Coliseum. So I think that helps the team in trying to build a fan base. And then also you're going to have fans from San Diego that are going to continue to follow the team in Orange County and Los Angeles. So I think that helps them as well. So I think the transition will be a little easier than, you know, what the Rams had to do a year ago.
All right, interesting stuff there. Eric, just on the way out, I'm going slightly over, and I'm only going to ask you one of the three questions I'm normally asking everyone. What's your biggest remaining concern on this roster? What's the area, not potentially a weak spot, but just one that you don't think was either addressed enough or that maybe could be a problem heading into the season?
Yeah, I think I'll go with pass rush. You know, even though they have Bosa and Ingram, they don't have guys behind them that have kind of been there and done that in terms of pass rush. They're hoping Barry Tashu comes on and Chris Landrum. And then interior pass rush, you know, they bring back Corey Legit, who's getting paid a lot of money. He didn't have a sack at all last year. He really needs to play up to, you know, his contract and add some juice from the interior so those edge guys can get there in terms of Bosa and Ingram. So I would say pass rush, particularly on third down and in the fourth quarter, is going to be key for this team so they can win those games in the fourth quarter. Six leads in the fourth quarter that they lost, and that's one of the reasons they ended up 5-11 last year.
Yeah, what a great point. You got to have finishers when you do have leads, so that makes a ton of sense. That is Eric Williams of ESPN, the excellent Chargers beat writer. Eric, again, I apologize. I know I went slightly over, but we appreciate you being so generous with your time, and we hope to have another conversation as the season gets a little bit closer.
Sure, no doubt. I look forward to it, and thanks for having me.
All right, yeah, the pleasure's all ours. Once again, that is Eric Williams of ESPN, and make sure you are following him on Twitter at Eric_D_Williams, and that's going to do it for the Chargers discussion on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, great stuff from Eric. That was a fun interview. And just to reiterate, I really am fascinated by the Chargers. If they were in another division, I may have them pegged as a worst-to-first candidate. As it is, I wouldn't be stunned to see the Chargers quickly ascend and maybe even grab themselves a wild card spot, a really talented team. They've got that franchise quarterback primed for a bounce back. And I should have said it at the top of the podcast, but that should really be the theme of this show, is franchise quarterbacks who have gotten a ton of assistance this offseason. We just talked about what a rebuilt offensive line and that talented supporting cast can do for Phillip Rivers. And now I want to head to Charlotte, where Bill Voth of Panthers.com has been covering the Panthers forever, and anyone who's been following them this offseason understands the importance of Cam Newton bouncing back from a down season and the emphasis that David Gettleman and the rest of that franchise has placed on Newton bouncing back by the moves that they've made. So want to bring in now Bill Voth from Panthers.com to talk about, you guessed it, the Panthers.
Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, as we continue to review the offseason for all 32 clubs, we are heading to the Panthers and Bill Voth of Panthers.com. Check him out on Twitter at PanthersBill, and make sure you check out his scouting report in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine. That'll be available on newsstands in the middle of June. Bill, thanks so much for taking some time. How's the day treating you?
It's lovely. It's raining here in Carolina now, which is a rarity in the spring, but hopefully we will get our familiar sun back in a little bit.
All right. Yeah, we'll hope for that. It's a little rainy here too, but very nice. I guess the forecast, I'll try and find a segue here. What's the forecast look like for the Panthers? It was a little rainy coming off the Super Bowl in 2015, and I guess I do want to start specifically with Cam Newton. What's the focal point for the 2015 MVP to get closer to that play than what we saw from him last season?
Well, there's so many. I think there's more than just one point. There's mm-hmm. so many layers when it comes to, just first of all, as we know, football in general, but then with somebody like Cam, there's so many things that go into it, whether it's mental or physical or his line and coaching and a whole bunch of stuff. He of course is coming off of off-season surgery on his shoulder. So yeah. During the spring right now, he's not doing a lot. During OTAs, he's just kind of standing around doing some conditioning and whatnot. And he really is the most annoying guy on the field, especially if you're a defensive guy, because he just screams all the time. Any sort of completion that the offense has, Cam is, in a positive way, you can say, a cheerleader. But it goes back to, and I know I'm just going to go off on a tangent here, it goes back to that Josh Norman fight, I guess you could call it a fight, two training camps ago. What people really don't realize about that is that Cam is always just yapping and screaming and doing whatever, jawing at the defense, because it's, you know, the excuse is that, you know, he's the ultimate competitor and all this other stuff. But when you're on the defense and you're hearing this all the time, I wasn't at all surprised that Josh Norman and him got into something. And I'm actually surprised that it doesn't happen more often, because it's as much as Cam does this. So anyway, trying to get back off this tangent. It's about, first of all, getting Cam healthy and getting him to be on schedule, which it appears he is, to be able to throw once training camp starts. Then you look at the offensive line, it needs to be better than last year and healthier. They went out and got Matt Khalil, who had one good year in Minnesota, but obviously he struggled after that and wasn't all that healthy. So they're hoping him having hip surgery and getting him together with his brother on the Panthers line will make him back to being at least a serviceable, and they're hoping obviously even better than serviceable, left tackle.
Right.
And so then when it comes to the rest of Cam, I think it's getting him to take more layups, which has always been a problem. And I think getting guys like Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel in the draft, which will be easier, you know, it gives him more options coming out of the backfield to take those layups and not always try and get the first down or the touchdown downfield.
Right.
That's a way to perhaps get his completion percentage up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're chatting here with Bill Voth, and check him out on Twitter at PanthersBill, and check out his work at Panthers.com. And Bill, we welcome tangents here. That's really my specialty, so I'm glad you did that. We've got a lot to kind of unpack here. Let me ask, though, wouldn't taking more layups in McCaffrey and Samuel would seem to help in that regard if Cam's willing to do so? Doesn't that also potentially kind of mask some of the offensive line concerns that'll be there, particularly on the edges as they turn over that group? You mentioned Matt Khalil, and then I think they could have a new starter on the right side as well, right?
Yeah, you would hope it would mask some of that. But it's not like Cam's not willing to do it. This is something he said last offseason. How the owner, Jerry Richardson, said that, you know, Cam, I want you to take more layups. It's that when he's out there and the bullets are flying and guys are coming at him because the line isn't holding up, that's where then he feels this need to put it all on himself. So the willingness is there. It's just getting him to actually do it is the key. And I think we saw that a lot in 2015 when he had a healthier line and he wasn't feeling ghosts at his feet right as the ball was snapped. So, yeah. But I do think that line, it's not a given that it's going to be okay, because you have Matt Khalil over on the left and then Darrell Williams at right tackle, who started 10 games last year. And that is assuming that Michael Orr doesn't come back. But I'm one of the few people that think that Michael will actually come back and be starting week one on the right side. But even then, it's really hard to find two good starting tackles in this league. So it's even harder to then find backups. I just think the Panthers, like so many other teams, the tackle positions are the house of cards. If one of them or both of them don't work, then your offense isn't going to work. And then those have really a huge effect on how Cam works.
Sure. And I know in the past, Mike Shula has also been big on trying to help out his tackles as much as possible. And it seems like the offense is kind of being recalibrated to help each other seemingly. I'm wondering about your kind of way too early impressions of Christian McCaffrey. But as I'm asking this question, I'm realizing, coming from Stanford, you probably don't have any impressions of him yet. He hasn't been able to get on the field yet.
Yeah, essentially my impressions are about him as interviewing him and how he's a kid that just says all the right things, the son of obviously a former player. So my impressions of him early are he's a lot like Steph Curry in a way, where he comes from this pro family, and that you can ask him any question and he's going to say, like, he's not really going to say anything, but he'll say enough where it's like it's saying something, but he's non-controversial and just really wants to do the right thing. So it kind of reminded me of a mix of like Steph Curry and Luke Kuechly, these two kind of like down to earth kids that do everything correctly. Obviously that's a very early impression, but yeah, we saw him on the field during rookie minicamp. So those 2 days, I'll tell you, it's against fellow rookies and or tryout players.
Sure.
And he was, as expected, he was the best player on the field. It looked like he was either sprinting when everyone else was jogging, or he's just that much better than anybody else. Now, that doesn't mean that that's how it's going to look once we start playing regular NFL games, but
right.
But that's how it looked in our only impressions we've had of him on the field.
Okay, and I would imagine when you spend the 8th overall pick on McCaffrey, maybe the rest of us are maybe perhaps underselling his inside running ability. I have to think that David Gettleman and Ron Rivera and Mike Shula, they view him as more than a gadget player. They like his ability to do it all as a back as well, right?
Yeah, and that's what they say, and that was one of the things the night they drafted him, Dave brought up Curtis Martin and how he could run in between the tackles, and it was like, wow, they didn't even use the whole, hey, I'm not trying to compare him to Curtis Martin. Dave just said, yeah, he mentioned how Curtis Martin was able to run between the tackles. But and so I think that's another thing that I think it's good in theory that they want to do that, but we'll see. I think it's we'll have to wait and see if, yeah, he was able to do that at Stanford. He was able to do that against Pac-12 teams. Is he going to be able to do that against the huge bodies in the NFL that are faster and could close a little bit faster? So we'll see. But no, your point is correct that they hope to utilize him in that aspect as well.
Before we switch gears and talk defense, probably not quite as many questions as there are with the offense coming off a disappointing year. It's May 24th as we tape here today, but I know that a video you posted of Kelvin Benjamin this week has caused a bit of a stir. I also know that players kind of work into these things gradually in terms of going full speed in OTAs, but how concerned should Panthers fans be by seeing a little bit of a waddle from Kelvin Benjamin as he's trying to run?
I mean, I'll be honest, and I know I shouldn't have thought this about Twitter, but it's like, I can't believe Twitter handled that the way it did. Like, really? It's the first day of OTA.
Right.
And to me, that's just like how Kelvin always looks. He looks, you know, not fast, not quick. He's plodding. But you know what? When he plays hard, good luck trying to keep him away from the ball because he's an absolute beast. So I think it was such a sign of how crazy we are when we are so thirsty for football content.
Sure.
And so for me, I just put it up because, you know, people wanted to see how Kelvin looked like if he really was like 280 pounds. I really didn't think anything of the route itself because it was a wet field. He wasn't supposed to look like he was playing a game. Right? And so, yeah, but he has brought this upon himself because whether it's OTAs or whatever, these teams do have rules and they do want their guys to come in at certain weights during the year. And so he did bring this upon himself by now doing it for the second time in the past two or three years when he's shown up heavier than they wanted him to. So I think there's a right to worry about, okay, is Kelvin really going to really just kind of, is the light going to stay on one day? So I think that's okay. But I also think that making a big deal and really making any sort of judgments by some, you know, one route during OTAs in May is probably a little extreme. And I say let's wait till September to make really some perhaps more firm judgments.
The voice of reason, I love it. I have to get away from Twitter sometimes to find that. And we found it here with Bill Voth talking Panthers. Follow him on Twitter if you look for the craziness, at Panthers Bill, not from him specifically, but across the board on Twitter. Bill, switching to the defense, what changed in the second half of last season? Because it seemed like out of the gate, even that great Super Bowl defense was struggling a little bit, and then things seemed to kind of turn it on. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, it's both. It's the line got better pressure and the secondary started covering better. And then since they work hand in hand, you can say the secondary started covering better. So then they got more pressure. And then they didn't have Luke Kuechly during the second half of the season. So that, you know, that was even more impressive. But I think, obviously the whole Josh Norman thing really set them up. I don't want to say set them up to fail, but I don't think if you said that, it would be all that inaccurate. It was going to be a huge learning curve for them at the beginning of the year. And then James Bradberry and Darryl Worley, who they took in the 16 draft, really started to settle in, especially Bradberry. And so I think getting that secondary shored up a bit later in the year helped. And then Mario Addison really turned into a guy on the edge where, you know, they had liked him as a part-time player, but he became even more than that. And I think defenses having to account for him opened up things for other guys. And so it's a defense that could be really, really talented. And one thing that I think goes overlooked across the NFL is how important nickelbacks are. And the Panthers have been looking hard for a nickelback ever since Captain Munnerlyn, after the 13 season, went to Minnesota. And when the Panthers haven't had a nickelback, and when they've had to use backups, they've just been getting shredded by offenses. And now, well, they went and re-signed Captain. So it was funny, it was on the same day that they re-signed Julius Peppers. So while the Peppers signing was the bigger headline, I think what was more important was getting Captain Munnerlyn in here to shore up that nickel situation, because the Panthers, like almost every team in the NFL, play more nickel and more sets like that than they do in their just base 4-3 defense.
Sure, sure. And, you know, Munnerlyn had some success with Minnesota, didn't quite have the same playmaking flair he developed a reputation for in Carolina. But how do you sort of view kind of the interesting juxtaposition? You mentioned Bradberry and Worley, and then you've got the vet in Munnerlyn coming in, and then really, I think, one of the older safety tandems in the league. They brought in Mike Adams, I believe, to start opposite Kirk Coleman. What do you think about the mix of kind of youth and experience back there and how everything kind of blends together?
I think it blends okay. I would certainly be concerned of the guys behind them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's once we start getting into the depth at either of those positions, it starts to get pretty ugly. So if you're depending on Kurt Coleman and Mike Adams to play 16 games each and perhaps play in the playoffs, that's okay. That'd be great. It sounds like it's a great idea on paper, mm-hmm. but is that reality? I'm not sure. So I think going into the year, certainly one of the questions for the Panthers will be depth at many of their positions. And I think that was one of the concerns last year too. A lot of people, I think last year going into 2016, one of the underrated storylines of 2015 is how relatively healthy they were in 2015. And then it's so hard in the NFL for so many of these teams. If they get injuries, especially multiple injuries at certain positions, how hard it is for them to recover. And so I think the secondary for the Panthers is going to be one of those spots to look out for, that if they have injuries, that could be a spot that could hurt them.
What are you're telling me, Bill, not everyone is Thomas Davis, a medical marvel and a physical just freak. What's the word on Davis? I've read some reports of trying to lighten his load a little bit. I would imagine that's obviously contingent on Luke Kuechly's health. Tell me about the second level, and let's throw in Shaq Thompson too. I mean, what does he need to do in what I believe year three now to help these other plans come to fruition?
Well, yeah. So assuming everybody's healthy, it actually Thomas's situation then wouldn't really hinge on Luke at all. So let's assume that Luke's going to be 100% healthy. It's all about trying to find more ways to get Shaq Thompson on the field, because he does have breakout potential, but he's got Thomas essentially blocking him for playing time. And as we talked about with nickel, so if you go into the nickel, well, Shaq can play some of those sets, but you know, so if it's like a Larry Fitzgerald or if it's a two tight end set, he can do that. But when you get into like the Brandon Cookses, or say if the Panthers were facing the Panthers with the McCaffreys or whoever, Samuels or whoever they could put in the slot, well, then Shaq probably wouldn't be able to do that. So then you'd have just Thomas Davis and Luke out there. And so they need to find ways to get Shaq on the field more if they're going to have just two linebackers out there. And so one of the ways to do that is take Thomas off the field a little bit more than they have over the last few years. And then also the silver lining of that they can try and solve Thomas is that, well, this will keep him fresher and this will allow him to play longer, which, hey, you know, it's true, but that's another one of those ideas that sounds really good in May. But if he's playing really well at the beginning of the year, we'll see how much they can execute that plan. But it's one of those good problems to have. It's too many good players at one position, but it's something that they're trying to figure out.
Interesting stuff, and I do have to ask, and I'm hopeful. You know, there's no cheering in the press box, obviously, but one of my favorite players to watch in the entire league is without question Luke Kuechly. And it was jarring seeing that sight, the way his season ended last year after another concussion and the outpouring of emotion on the field. Where do you think he is at? You know, you said everyone's assuming 100% health, of course. Where do you think kind of his head's at? And I don't mean literally, but just kind of his thought process after going through these scary things. And frankly, the Panthers, too, their perspective on one of the heartbeats of that defense and what it means when he does go down, if he goes down again.
I don't think he's changed at all. Okay. There's almost, and some, I don't know if this is the right word, almost a naivete about just listen. Luke plays football. Luke wants to play football. That's what he should be doing. And he understands the risks. He's okay with them. He's talked to his family about them. He's going to be out there. He's going to keep playing. And thanks for your concern, but this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, and so while I just think because we haven't seen a scene like we saw, you know, like we hear about these concussions and sometimes they do jar us, but we haven't seen a reaction like that, especially since concussions have, you know, come to the forefront and we've started to realize what they may actually mean, what they may be doing to players. And so that was one of those visceral reactions that I think it makes a lot of people say, wow, this is some serious stuff. But Luke just doesn't see it the same way that I think the rest of us saw it. So I think in his mind, everything's A-okay, and he can't wait to keep playing. But right now, he's dealing with a little bit of lower back soreness, so they're keeping him out during the team periods of OTAs. But I think that'll still give, you know, some people on the outside some pause and say, oh, what's going on? Is it really his back and all that other stuff? I mean, it is. It is truly his back. But I think in his mind and in the Panthers' mind, it's all systems go headed towards week one.
Okay, well, we'll be hoping for the best for him, and obviously an mm-hmm. important situation to monitor relative to the Panthers. Lastly, I got a couple questions, just most improved position group, biggest remaining weakness, and a fantasy football nugget. But before I go there, I just have to ask quickly, what's it like having Pat back in town? It's not every day where you see a Hall of Famer get to return when he's still got clearly some tread left on the tires to try and contribute. What do you expect from Peppers, and just what it's like having him back as one of the most successful players in franchise history, obviously?
I started covering the Panthers in 2005, and it was the first NFL team I really covered full time. And it's funny when you're around these guys, you they're not as big as you get used to it. They're not as big as you would expect them to be. A lot of people, when they think of NFL players, they're like, oh, you think they're all huge. But if you saw like Luke Kuechly or Ryan Khalil out somewhere and you didn't know who they were, you wouldn't think twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
Julius from day one, when I got here, was like, whoa, like this guy, humans aren't supposed to be that big. And so then the second guy I've ever felt like that was Cam Newton. So right. what's interesting to me is to see them both on the field at the same time. And Julius is out there, and he just like yesterday during stretching, he kept his helmet on the whole time. And it's just, he's just like, everyone has their helmets off and joking around. And Julius is just standing there in the middle with his helmet on, almost looking like Darth Vader. Like, he's intimidating. And it used to be something where it was like intimidating and maybe standoffish. And now, because he's older, I think it's intimidating. And he's kind of cool about it. Like, it's just kind of like, that's kind of cool. It's Julius Peppers just being Julius Peppers. And Cam's over there just yapping. So I think it could be interesting in training camp when days get hot and Cam's yapping around. And if Julius ever decides to do something about it, it would be interesting to see those two go nose to nose just for a few seconds, you know. But just, you know, nothing, you know, fight wise or anything.
Right.
But those two are just behemoths that humans aren't supposed to be that big. So it's interesting to have someone who can match Cam's, I guess, I don't know how to even describe it. Cam looks like a beast. So it's interesting to have someone on the other side who looks like a beast as well, and who's also going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that makes for an interesting optic for sure. And I'm curious to see if Ron Rivera will have some packages in place. I'd love to see Peppers rushing inside next to Quan Short. I don't know if that's what they're hoping to try and do or not, but looking forward to seeing that. Bill Voth, great stuff here on the Panthers. Check out Bill at Panthers.com and on Twitter at PanthersBill. And then I'm ending every podcast this way or every interview, so I just got to ask you, most improved position group and the one that concerns you the most with, you know, pretty much all the acquisitions out of the way at this point of the offseason?
I'll start with the bad news first. So the thing that concerns me the most is going to be offensive line. It's going to be tackles. They're putting a lot of faith in Matt Khalil returning to the form he was as a rookie,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of faith in either Michael Ward returning or Darrell Williams, 2015 fourth round pick, being serviceable again at right tackle. And then if one of those things don't work, then they're in big trouble. If two of those things don't work, then it's really, really, really big trouble. So I think that's the tackle situation is the most concerning to me. As far as improved position group, can I say hybrid? Because
sure.
I would say running backs, if we were considering both Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel running backs,
right.
But obviously they're both hybrid type guys. So, you know, I can't say receivers because they can. So I just say they're hybrids on offense, which I think is really interesting. And to me, I see it as a counter to what defenses have been trying to do with, say, Shaq Thompson or Arizona's defense, where they're trying to bring in hybrids on defense to match those rare athletic guys on offense. Well, now I think this is a counter move by the offenses, getting even faster, even more athletic. And so I think it'll be interesting if the Panthers can pull it off and be creative with it.
I love that answer. Like you said, that's the way the league is going, and that's just the perfect response there. And then, Bill, just on the way out, a fantasy nugget, whether it's a Devin Funchess breakout, a McCaffrey RB1, Cam Newton returning to MVP form, there's a lot of possibilities. Anything you feel comfortable hanging your hat on from a fantasy perspective for the Panthers this year?
All right. I'll go different again. How about the Panthers' defense? Because I wouldn't trust anybody in the offense right now, because who's going to get touches? So you got, think about all these guys that are going to need their touches. You got Jonathan Stewart, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, Greg Olsen, Kelvin Benjamin. Where's Devin Funchess going to get any touches? And I just think the offense, if it's going to work well, that ball has to be spread out all over. And so, fantasy wise, I think it could work. You could be okay. It's just week in and week out, you're taking the risk that you could be shut out. Whereas defensively, I do think this defense could be good enough and put up enough points with turnovers in sacks to be one of the better defenses in fantasy.
All right. Outstanding. That is Bill Vogt. We went a little bit over because we both like tangents, so I apologize, but so much great information here, and we really appreciate you being so generous with your time. We may even try and call you back once the season gets a little closer and see if we can talk a little bit more Panthers down the road.
Sure thing. Anytime.
All right. That is Bill Vogt. Check him out at Panthers.com and on Twitter at PanthersBill. Thank you again, Bill. Have a great day.
You too.
Alrighty, one more big thank you to Bill Vogt of Panthers.com and Eric Williams of ESPN.com. Really enjoyed our chats with those fellas today. Learned a lot about the Panthers and the Chargers. That is going to do it for today's podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and the biggest thank you goes to you guys for being with us every week. And one more reminder that if you haven't done so already, we would love it if you head to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Leave us a rating and a review while you're there. That would be swell. Also, make sure you're heading to ProFootballWeekly.com. Lots of great content up there. Greg Gabriel has a scouting report on the Heisman winner, Lamar Jackson of Louisville, and we're working on all kinds of other content as well. So head to ProFootballWeekly.com, and I will be back next week with another episode of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Take care. Thanks again.